And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Before we jump in, I want to tell you about New York Times Audio, a new iOS app for New York Times news subscribers. It's got the Athletic NBA show, plus all the other great podcasts from The Athletic, exclusive shows, narrative articles, and more. New York Times Audio, download it now at nytimes.com/audio app.
Do have a take.
Point of contention.
What are y'all talking about? Y'all hate. Stop hating. Everybody hate.
Welcome back to Point of Contention. Five topics, 5 minutes, 5 points of contention. I'm Andrew Schleck, not Zach Harper. I'm filling in. I'm also producing this show. Coming up, we've got Heat Culture, baby. We've got Spurs. Are they the best fit for Wimby? We got Nuggets, Lakers. Who makes the postseason first, the Pistons or the Rockets? And we got Scoot at two. Subscribe to our new YouTube channel by searching The Athletic NBA Show or just click below where you see our name on the YouTube screen. Also, subscribe to The Bounce, a free NBA newsletter from The Athletic. You can sign up at theathletic.com/thebounce. Today is May 18th, National Marvin Day. Jay, do you have a favorite Marvin? Maybe Bagley? Williams? Gay? The Martian?
Definitely not Marvin Bagley. Let's go with Marvin Williams. He seems like a really good guy.
Okay.
And he had a good career. He was supposed to be like a superstar and never became that, but he had a productive long career.
Yeah. He had a very Jeff Green career.
Also, it was very sad when Kemba Walker wanted the Celtics to sign Marvin Williams, and they didn't, and he was alerted in the locker room, and it was like one of the saddest things I've ever seen.
Oh, my God.
He was so disappointed because I think he thought they were getting Marvin Williams, and who do you sign with that year? The Bucks, I believe.
Yeah,
I think that's right.
And one of the reporters told Kemba, and it was the only time I ever saw the guy sad.
Because of Marvin Williams. It's a great story for Marvin Day. It's a great Marvin story. In this corner, he covers the Celtics. He used to be the president of the Dylan Brooks fan club, and he awaits the arrival of Cooper Flagg. It's Jay Sacramento King. Jay, is there a team that you just... if you were Wimby, that you would refuse to go to? Let's say a particular team drew number one. Is there a team that you'd just say, nope, not doing it? I'm Victor Wembanyama, not going.
San Antonio.
San Antonio. Oh, yes. San Antonio. Earlier. Yeah.
I wouldn't be going to San Antonio. Nope. And I don't think he thinks that way. I think he's excited to go to the Spurs for whatever reason. Maybe he's got some Greg Popovich love. Maybe the Tony Parker connection is driving him to want to go to San Antonio. I believe he was excited when the Spurs won the lottery, but me? No. Nope.
No.
Sorry. Respect to Greg Popovich, but I'm not doing it. I'm not going to San Antonio. I'm not playing with the guys that got there. Nope. I'm out.
I love it.
And in this corner, he now covers the Heat permanently because the Heat are never losing a game ever again. It's Will Guillory. Will.
Oh, wow. I missed a Stevie Francois because Steve Francis was the one who Stevie Fran. I would have been Stevie Francois.
You would have been Stevie Francois in this situation. Will, would you have refused to go to any destination if you were Wimby?
Oh man, I think I might have been Houston. I'm just so out on everything Houston and just that culture, and just everything they got going on. They got a bunch of guards who hate the pass. I would have just been really angry watching Wemby jog up the court and looking at KPJ jack up three-pointers. That just would have hurt my basketball soul. So I'm glad. I think he was happy he didn't go to Houston, if you see the reaction going around on Twitter right now. And I agree with him that nobody wants to see him in Houston playing that garbage brand of basketball they play out there. I guess I got to be since Zach isn't here, I guess I got to be the obnoxious Heat culture guy. So I'm stepping in. I'm filling the void. I'm giving Eric Spoelstra all the praise. So I'm ready to step in and do my job this pod.
Well, that's a great transition, because that gets us into take one. Heat culture takes game one. Jimmy Butler and the Heat took game one of the East Finals, in large part by outscoring the Celtics 46-25 in the third quarter, with Jimmy and Max Strus combining for 25 of those 46 points. Jimmy Butler was the best player on the court last night. 35 points, 5 boards, 7 assists, and 6 steals. Holy smokes. Jimmy was asked this postgame.
Jimmy, I would imagine that you don't feel like an 8 seed. You and the Heat. This doesn't feel like you're climbing mountains and knocking off favorites and all those kinds of things.
That's a question?
Well, it's the start of a question.
Oh, okay. Well, what's the question?
Just the question is, how does this feel to you guys, what you have done so far? And if you go back all the way to that night against Chicago in the play-in, did you think then that something like this would be possible?
Damn right. I did. Damn right. We did. And the best part about it is we still don't care what none of y'all think. Honestly speaking, we don't care if you pick us to win. We never have. We never will. We know the group of guys we have in this locker room. We know that Coach Spo puts so much confidence and belief in each and every one of us. Coach Pat as well. And so our circle's small, but this circle got so much love for one another. We pump constant confidence into everybody. And we go out there and we hoop. We play basketball the right way, knowing that we always got a chance.
Jimmy's got supreme belief in his squad, and rightfully so. They're in the East Finals, surprisingly. But Jay, was last night's win more about how the Heat played or the lack of adjustments, aggressiveness, spacing from the Celtics?
The Celtics thought this was going to be sweet. They thought it was going to be sweet. It's the Heat. It's the Heat. It's Jimmy Butler. Heat it's culture. Eric Spoelstra. You cannot come out in the third quarter. And I thought it started even before the third quarter. Like, right away, first quarter, they let Bam get to the basket a few times. They let Jimmy just walk into wide open jumpers. I don't know why Robert Williams was standing so far back in switches and not even trying to disrupt the rhythm at all. It started early, and then third quarter, they come out like, you know what? We're up 12 already. It's 71-59. This game's over. You know why it's not over? Because it's Jimmy Butler, because it's Miami Heat, because it's Eric Spoelstra. 2 minutes, 24 seconds later, it was tied. And then shortly after that, the game was not over because the Celtics still had a chance late and squandered that. But they thought it was going to be sweet. They thought it was going to be easy. And man, you cannot underestimate this Heat team, because they will take it from you if you do.
Yeah, and I thought this game was just a perfect combination of what we always expect from Jimmy Butler, still in game one at your crib. We've seen it, you know, series after series this year. He did it again in Boston. And we've seen the roller coaster with that Celtics team. It's like they look amazing, and then they look like everybody's just standing around watching Tatum go one-on-one. And when you play against a team like Miami, it just don't work. You can't do that. And then you give up 46 points in the third quarter. I mean, I love Heat culture as much as the next man, but we shouldn't be looking at the Heat to drop 46 points in one quarter in your crib against any team that has hopes of winning a championship. It was just an awful, you know, second half for the Celtics. Just so much going wrong. They're throwing the ball all over the place, taking bad shots. Jason Tatum takes 0 shots in the fourth quarter. Marcus Smart went from double-digit assists in the first half to what I think 1 assist in the second half. It's just all bad. It's just, man, the Celtics team was just so confusing, because when they look good, they look so good. And then when things go bad, they just fall completely apart. And the thing we know about this Miami team, they're just steady. They're just going to keep coming at you. They're going to make their adjustments. They're going to find a way to get Jimmy going. And they're fearless, man. And they showed if you just sold just 1 ounce of slippage, you give them a crease, they're going to bust through that door. And now you're staring at a 1-0 deficit if you're the Celtics. And man, over the last two seasons, Jay, correct me if I'm wrong, they're now 10-10 in home games in the playoffs. I mean, if you're going to be a real championship contender, you're 500 at home in playoff games. When Boston looks good, they look amazing. We've seen Jason Tatum drop 50 in a game seven. We know Jaylen Brown is an all NBA caliber player. But it's just, man, I just head scratching just the way they blow these games at home in playoff situations.
The last play of the third quarter was unforgivable. Utterly unforgivable. It looked like Al Horford and Malcolm Brogdon just had some sort of miscommunication where Brogdon thought he was supposed to be guarding Cody Zeller. Why would you switch that? Why would you guard Cody Zeller there? And then Kyle Lowry's driving the paint, and instead of recovering to Max Strus, who's a really good shooter, Brogdon goes to take away Cody Zeller at the three-point arc? Why? What are you doing? Know the game plan. Know the personnel. Even if you had not even come up with a game plan, even if they had not scouted those guys for a second, you know, do not close out to Cody Zeller. He doesn't matter. Yeah. Go to Max Strus instead. Like, you that's it. You just have to know. And
if you see a bald dude with a face mask, you don't close out to him. I don't care if you've never seen Cody Zeller play.
100% of the time. 100% of the time.
He hadn't made a three since April of 2021. And Malcolm Brogdon went to him instead of Max Strus. Like, what are you doing? Why?
So, Jay, did the Celtics need to do this to themselves, though, to get themselves pumped up? Do they need to be behind? Is this how this is supposed to go?
I think sometimes when they get into a new series, and Tatum talked about it after, like, this year about game one of the Milwaukee series last year. It's just a huge adjustment to go from Philadelphia, which slows it down all the time, which wants to have stagnant isolations, which, quite frankly, like, faded in the fourth quarter a lot, to the Heat, which aren't going to fade, absolutely aren't going to fade. They're going to keep coming at you no matter what. And, like, they force you to guard a lot. Even when they go to Jimmy Butler in isolation, it's like he's coming off two different screens to get the isolation. And then they've got, you know, screens going on the weak side, and they just make you guard a lot more than Philly did. And Philly was really tough to guard in different ways, but I think the adjustment from series to series was just a really pretty drastic one here, and the Celtics didn't do a good job of it. Even in the first half, like, they shot really well. They scored 40 points in the paint, but it was more that they were just getting layups and they were actually playing like tough, good basketball. So I
feel like I just got to show some love to Jimmy Butler too. I mean, just another spectacular game from him both ends. He was just locking Tatum up in the second half, had the crazy three-pointer that bounced like 10 feet in the air and dropped in to ice the game. I mean, that dude, it just has ice in his veins. He just fearless.
The two steals late.
The two ended up with six steals for the game. I mean, he was just unbelievable in this game. And we joke about Heat culture and all of these random dudes who step up for them. But, you know, that all is based on their belief in Jimmy Butler and his ability to step into these hostile environments and do what he did last night. And that dude is just spectacular, man. The way he's able to impact the game on both ends of the court, his decision making, and when it comes to his shot making, it's just always there. I mean, just an incredible player.
Let's move on to take two. Wimby in the tone. Of course, when a generational player who happens to be over 7 feet tall comes available at the first overall pick, it's going to San Antonio. And they won the lottery Tuesday night. This is obviously a good fit culture-wise, coaching-wise for Wimby. But what is next for the Spurs? Will, if you're the Spurs, do you build this thing slowly through the draft over the next couple of years? Or are you trying to add to this team right away in free agency and through trade?
as a person who's experienced this firsthand during the Anthony Davis era, the idea of trying to build up quickly and chase the playoffs just because you got a great prospect, it doesn't end well. I'm going to just let the Spurs people know. Try to trade for Jrue Holiday and Tyreke Evans if you want. I promise you it will not work. Build this thing up slowly.
Tyreke Evans.
Oh, my God. It was rough times in New Orleans. I've seen some things down here. But I think they've been doing it the right way in San Antonio, building up with these young guys, not investing a whole bunch of money in the DeJounte Murrays of the world. Just get some young core pieces to build around Wemby. I think this is a whole different conversation. The way we're like turning Wemby into like the best player in the league before he even touches foot in America is crazy to me.
You're right, it's crazy. He's not going to be the best player in the league. He's going to be the best player ever, Will.
Best player in team sports. best human since Martin Luther King.
In team sports.
I mean, it's insane. A dude is a teenager still. I mean, we got to let him grow up a little bit and figure some things out. So I think the Spurs have been doing things the correct way, letting young guys like Devin Vassell, Keldon Johnson, Sohan, grow up slowly, figure out their roles. There'll probably be some pressure there with Greg Popovich. You know, the clock is ticking on the end of his career. I'm sure they want him to be involved in some type of playoff run with Wemby. But I say the right thing to do is save those picks, build up your young guys, and don't rush it because things are lovely now. But we're in a day and age in the NBA, man. It's a snap of a finger, and all of a sudden – these young guys get wandering eyes and they start having dreams in New York and L.A. and you'll be stuck right back in this position if you make the wrong decisions.
You've got to be aggressive looking for the opportunity, but don't get too eager. Don't go out and just trade for the first Kristaps Porzingis you see. You know, don't go out and then mortgage the rest of your future for Kyrie Irving. Like, just take your time. Understand that you have a massive advantage over everyone else because you have this unbelievable prospect. Understand that he's under team control for a while now, and you have time to get this right, to get the supporting cast next to him correct. Don't screw it up. Going after a second-rate star or second-rate stars around him and having them be bad fits, that's the only way to screw this up. Otherwise, stay young, flourish, keep your draft capital, and wait for the right fit. Wait for an opportunity to pounce on a guy that can fit next to him and just allow him to be great. Because, I mean, we can joke about some of the stuff that's come out about Wembanyama, but he is the rarest of prospects, just a 7'4" freak who can handle, who can shoot, who's probably the best defensive prospect in I don't know how many decades. And they already have not like super intriguing young talent, but a few young guys who should be rotation pieces at the very least. And they have pieces to go out and build around him. Just be patient. Just be patient.
Yeah.
And we saw it with LeBron in Cleveland too. It was like Antoine Jameson. It was Mo Williams. It was, and they never got it right because they were too urgent. Shaq, you can't get too eager when you have a young star because that's the way to get the young star to leave and to underachieve as a team because you couldn't find the right pieces around him.
We've seen in the Boston, the best way to build around a young star is to get another young star to play with them. And I think that's the job for San Antonio. They got really good young role players there. They need that second star to put next to Wembanyama, and that's when they're going to be a real contender. As much as I like Sohan and Keldon Johnson, those guys aren't that. So they got to find that second guy, and the best way to do it is through the draft. We've seen it over and over again. But if I could just have one aside, I just want to, you know, say tip a hat and RIP to the days where it was easy for sports writers like me and Jay King to skip the San Antonio trip because none of us like going to San Antonio. I'm just going to break the news to y'all. We don't like the Riverwalk. We don't like that arena that is in the middle of nowhere. I used to love just seeing San Antonio. Oh, I'm not going there. So we can skip that one. Now I got to go to San Antonio. I got to find something to do on a Tuesday night when nobody's out in the city just so I can see Victor Wembanyama. So it was fun while it lasted, Jay. But now we got to go to San Antonio, I guess, and figure out what the hell to do.
Yeah, I wasn't planning to just toast San Antonio today, but here I am.
Here
Stevie Francois.
Let's take a quick break, fellas. Right after the break, we're going to talk Nuggets.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And we're back. Take three. The Nuggets take game one. The Nuggets have a 1-0 lead in the series against the Lakers, and Nikola Jokic was dominant for the first three quarters of this game. But something changed late in this one. It made me think a little bit differently about what the Lakers could do. The Lakers put Rui Hachimura on Jokic and allowed Anthony Davis to be the rover on defense. The adjustment nearly brought the Lakers all the way back, but the Nuggets were able to hold it together and prevail. Jay, how will the Nuggets adjust to this in game two?
Do people think Nikola Jokic has never had a 6'7 forward guard him? Do they think he's never run into a team that has put a power forward on him and had a shot blocker roaming? Do people think that he's really not going to solve the Rui Hachimura problem? Like, are people kidding me?
That's what they call him.
I could not believe the discourse after game one, because Jokic had a few bad plays against that strategy. Like, do you people really think the MVP is gonna let Rui Hachimura just take him out of everything? And granted, the bigger piece of that strategy is having Anthony Davis at the rim as a second layer of protection, and that's where the Nuggets need to approach it better. They need to find a way to punish the Lakers for having Davis sag off Aaron Gordon and be at the rim. But they've seen this stuff before. The Celtics do it with Grant Williams and have Rob Williams floating behind him. The 76ers have done it with PJ Tucker with Embiid at the rim. And both of those teams have had mild success, but it's mild and it's fleeting because this Denver offense is fantastic and they have solutions for just about everything. So if I'm Denver, I wouldn't be too worried about that at all. I would make a few minor spacing adjustments to use Gordon as a screener, to use him as a slasher, to get him to punish Anthony Davis and use that strategy to open up guys for three, whether it's Caldwell Pope or Murray or Porter Jr. And the big piece after the first game to me is, can the Nuggets stop the Lakers? And because I think the Nuggets are going to score in this series. They're going to score against anyone. That offense is just unbelievable. But for the first quarter, first half maybe, they were playing defense. And then they just stopped. And I don't know whether it was because they let off the gas because they were up so much or whether they're going to have significant problems with this Lakers team. We'll see. But they need to play much better defense moving on than they did in game one.
Yeah, I agree with what Bruce Brown said. I forget if it was after the game or the day after. And somebody asked him why so many people are doubting Denver. He was like, yeah, because they don't watch us. And I think a lot of these people who think Rui Hachimura is like Ben Wallace, all of a sudden, I'm going to let y'all in on something. Whatever strategy you think works on Jokic, he's going to fry you. Whether you put a small dude on him, big dude on him, you switch, you front the post, you double him. It doesn't matter what you try to do against Jokic. He will figure it out, and he will make you look silly. And I think if they try to throw Rui Hachimura on him for 40 minutes this next game, he's going to make that man look bad. And that's just why Joker is one of the most dominant bigs we've ever seen in this game, because he can find a way to be effective against every coverage, and he has the mind to read what you're doing and figure it out within the snap. So, if anything, I thought, as crazy as the numbers sound, looked at the end of the game, I thought AD did a decent job against him, at least when they played half court. I think the biggest issue was Jokic was just flat out playing harder than AD during that first half. You saw him a few times just sprinting past AD. Now, Jokic, his sprint doesn't look like everybody else's sprint, but he was sprinting there in the first half, and he was beating AD down the court. He had, 20 rebounds in the first quarter or something like that. I think that's the big thing. AD needs to match Jokic's effort during the start of game two to kind of match that and give them a better chance. Of course, AD started hitting shots, and that gave the Lakers a better chance. But, I think whatever strategy you try to use against Jokic, he'll figure it out. The biggest thing is always, what are you doing with Jamal Murray? What are you doing with Michael Porter Jr.? Can you find a way to play Aaron Gordon off the court? I think, like Jay said, that's the one good thing about the strategy, is maybe they'll get Aaron Gordon off the court if AD can kind of lurk around the rim. But still, I think Aaron Gordon is capable of knocking down those corner threes and forcing AD to come out the paint. It's just a matter of them switching up what they are doing. So, yeah, I think the Nuggets are still the big-time favorite in this series. I think, some of the shots the Lakers were knocking down in that fourth quarter, I'm not sure if they can keep that up consistently. Austin Reeves catching fire the way he did. I think the best thing they can hope to do is turn this into a half-court game, force the Nuggets to walk it up the court, maybe trick Jamal Murray into trying to play in some hero ball. But, yeah, if you're thinking that you're going to trick Jokic or, convince him that he can't dominate, I promise it will not work.
Yeah. This is what's insane to me. Everybody is so pro Lakers that they do this Rui Hachimura thing. That's all anybody wants to talk about is this Rui adjustment. Nikola Jokic had 34, 21, and 14 in this game. If anybody on the Lakers had that, we wouldn't talk about anything else. We would talk about nothing else. But because it was Nikola Jokic and it was the Nuggets, nobody's talking about it. It is absolutely insane. It's insane. He was 12 of 17 from the field. You know what the adjustment could be? Shoot more and score 50 and have a triple-double. Nikola Jokic,
He had those numbers. He had those numbers with a bad fourth quarter. He didn't really do much in the fourth quarter. Still had 34, 20, and 14. So that tells you just how dominant he was in that game.
And he did it against the guy everyone was proclaiming the best defender in the world, and Anthony Davis. Which, And he cooked Anthony Davis to the extent that they were like, nah. Let's see what Rui's got on.
We're so pro Lakers that we give the Lakers half a win after that game's over. It's like, I think the Lakers are six, probably.
My favorite part of this series so far is just how spicy Mike Malone has been. Yeah. Did you see his quote about D'Angelo Russell? What's the storyline? D'Angelo Russell's been playing pretty well, and we played him off the court. And it's like, oh man, that's how you feel, Mike Malone. That's how you feel where you're out there, not only just thinking this, but saying this publicly in your press conference. Mike Malone has a chip on his shoulder right now, and he thinks his team is awesome. And you can tell by the way that he talks, how crazy he's talking right now, how reckless he's talking right now. He believes in this team to the fullest. He doesn't care how much of a target he puts on their back. He thinks they're up to it. And you could tell. And he's always like that a little bit. He's a fierce competitor, you could tell. But man, I've never seen a coach be like, yeah, we play that dude off the court. Why aren't you asking me about that?
So good. If I had Joker in my corner, I'd be talking spicy too. I tell you that much. Yeah. I'd be feeling real good about myself. But I love Michael Malone too, because he's one of the few dudes left in the league who will just kill his team in post game. He'll come out and say they played soft. He'll say they didn't deserve to win. And so many of these coaches are scared to say anything about their team. You'll see Michael Malone calling timeouts during the game. He's just disgusted with his team. I love everything about what he brings personality-wise. And they need that fire, because we know Jokic is such a laid-back dude. And I think Malone brings some of that fire that they need. So, yeah, I completely agree with Andrew. Everybody's, you know, jumping on the Lakers train because they had that one good quarter at the end. I think the Nuggets probably cruising game two.
They got to figure out a way to deal with the LeBron, Austin Reeves pick and pop, though. Like,
coming up after the break.
What are you doing?
Losers on lottery night.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Take four, lottery losers. Oh, on Tuesday night, the Rockets fell from the second slot in the lottery to the fourth, and the Detroit Pistons fell as far as they could, down to fifth from the first overall slot in the reverse standings. The Rockets are heading into year four of their rebuild after three losing seasons, and the Pistons have had four seasons of 23 wins or less, with their last season of 17 wins being the worst in franchise history. With that said, both teams have interesting building blocks, Cade Cunningham, Jalen Green, and more. But Will, which team do you think gets back to the playoffs first, Pistons or Rockets?
As I've said earlier in this pod,
playoffs.
Let's start with the plan. Maybe we can set the bar a little lower for these dudes. But no, as I said earlier in the pod, I'm anti everything Houston. I hate everything that they're doing with that culture, the way that they play. So you could basically say anybody in the league, and I would have said them over Houston. I just think it's just trash down there. They play a trash brand of basketball. They're building a team in a horrible way. I feel bad for dudes like Jalen Green and Jamari Smith. I really like both of those guys and what they do, but I just can't see them prospering in Houston. Maybe Ime Udoka comes down there and changes a few things. He holds some dudes accountable. We saw him do it in Boston, calling out Tatum and Brown the way he used to. But what I've seen from those dudes, it's just not good. And I also just want to pour one out for my guy, James Edwards. My man typed the word Wembanyama so many times over the past few months, and now he's looking at Jairus Walker life for the next 7 years. So shout out to James. Hopefully he'll figure something out down there in Detroit to write about, because it's not great right now.
This is a tough choice because these are two wretched, wretched squads that have just played some disgusting basketball over recent seasons. I cannot believe what I'm going to say, because I have been so disgusted by the way they've played basketball. I have been so... It's despicable how many low IQ guys they have put in the same roster. I'm going with Houston. I'm going with Houston.
Is this the James Harden factor? Like, what's going on here?
Şengün is good. Jabari Smith is good. Jalen Green might be good. Tari Eason is at least useful. I actually think they have a reasonable core. We've heard the James Harden whispers, and we know Detroit ain't going after anybody like James Harden and getting somebody like that. They actually have a head coach, and Ime Udoka's good. And so that matters too. Who knows?
That's helpful.
Who's having going to be Detroit's helpful. Head coach?
As it turns out.
As much as I am shocked to say that I would pick the Rockets over another situation in the league, here I am, and I'm backing the Rockets right now. That's it.
Wow.
I would go Pistons too, just because I believe in Cade Cunningham. I think he's obviously going to have to get on the court, but I think Cade is likely the best player on either of these squads.
He's definitely the best prospect on either of the teams, yeah.
Yeah, and I just think his leadership ability, and because he is going to be a guy that has the ball in his hands, I think he's going to be able to control a lot for them. Now, if they can get some wings and stop bringing in centers, I think that they'll get it together. But this draft is like kind of important for Detroit. Like they really need to hit on somebody, whoever that is at five. I think there are a lot of useful players in that range. There's no Wembanyamas or Scoots or anybody out at five, but there's going to be somebody useful, and they cannot whiff on this pick. If they Killian Hayes this pick, it could send them into a longer tailspin than this needs to be. I mean, they're already heading into year five. And I know that Pistons fans are like, well, technically, it's year four because... No, it's not. It's year five, okay? They cannot afford to miss on this draft pick. So I think that, you know, Troy Weaver's got his work cut out for him over the next, you know, month or so.
And I think that's one of the more interesting things about this draft is I think it's very rare to see so many teams at the top of the board feeling pressure to win next year, whether you talk about Charlotte, Portland, Houston, Detroit, Orlando. All of these teams are picking top five, top seven, and all of them are looking at it like, we want to at least be in the play-in next year. We want to bring in some vet guys, and we're ready to win now. We don't usually see that with a team picking number two in the draft. But Charlotte, with their LaMelo situation, they're feeling some pressure to at least start putting some more wins on the board. We know Portland is feeling a ton of pressure right now with Damian Lillard. I think the most likely scenario is they probably trade that number three pick, right, with hopes of making a win now move. And we know Houston, they basically told the whole world that they're tired of losing and they want to bring James Harden back and they want to start winning again. So I think that makes this draft extremely interesting, where we know there are some really good prospects at the top of the board, but there are also some teams that are probably looking like, we don't really want a 19-year-old that we need to develop for 3 years. We want to win right now. So I think that makes this super interesting, on top of Victor Wembanyama going to one of my least favorite NBA cities.
just one more pile on San Antonio. Just one more time. Take five. Hornets dilemma. Tuesday night, the Hornets were another team that had some lottery luck, jumping two slots, the number two overall pick. Mitch Kupchak had this to say at a media availability post-lottery. I don't think that we are where we need to be from a talent level, but we've got a lot more talent than we did 2 or 3 years ago. So I think that we can be a little bit picky and take into consideration not only overall talent, but position. Oh my gosh. The Hornets won 27 games and they're thinking about drafting for position. This cannot be a thing. That's the most terrifying statement that I've heard post-lottery in a long time. Anyway, the Hornets have a very interesting decision to make.
Does that mean they're drafting another center? Does that mean they're drafting? They do love centers.
Right. LaMelo is their best player, their franchise cornerstone. But the player that's largely considered the second best player in the draft is Scoot Henderson, who is also a point guard. So, Jay, who would you go with if you're the Hornets? Scoot Henderson, Brandon Miller, perhaps a wild card with Amen Thompson? Where are you going?
I would go with whoever I think is the best. Unlike Mitch Kupchak.
Wait, you're not drafting for a position at two?
No. Wow. No.
Wow, they're ready to go, Jay. They're ready to go.
Absolutely not. However, the person I think is the best in that spot is Brandon Miller. And I guess part of it is the position that he plays. It's more that he's 6'9", 6'10", has immense defensive versatility, can shoot, has some off the dribble game already, and he's very young, and guys at that size tend to develop that part of the game later on. I just think he's the prototype of guy that wins you games deep in the playoffs when you need the 6'10 guy to just shut down another team, get rebounds, run your offense. Those are the guys that win today. It's the super quality wings, the guys with tons of size. It's not the point guards who can't shoot. And Scoot Henderson is awesome. He's got like some Derrick Rose to him. He's built like a Hall of Fame football player. Just shredded. He looks like Semi Ojeleye for those aware of the former Celtics draft pick.
Let's hope he shoots better than Semi Ojeleye.
SMU great. Semi Ojeleye.
But to have a point guard built like Semi Ojeleye is insane. Yeah. And there's a chance. And look, like Derrick Rose won a lot of games. Russell Westbrook won a lot of games. You don't have to be an elite shooter to be a great player at the point guard position. I just think Brandon Miller has the same ceiling or a similar ceiling to Scoot Henderson and also has a higher floor because of the size and the shooting that he has already.
Yeah, I think it is very close between Scoot and Brandon Miller. I'm also bold enough to say if you have the number two overall pick, you should just take the best player on the board. And I probably lean a little bit more towards Scoot, just to be honest. I think just having an explosive playmaker, a dude who can get into the lane and create, I think is really valuable in today's NBA. So I probably lean Scoot. But I do also think it's a very interesting situation for Charlotte, because we're not just speaking in a vacuum here. We're talking about a team that has a Miles Bridges situation going on. And now you're bringing in Brandon Miller and some of the baggage he has with him coming from Alabama. I think that's maybe added to your consideration if you're Charlotte. You already got to answer Miles Bridges questions. Now you got to answer some Brandon Miller questions as well. I think that might factor into their decision here. Again, like I said earlier, you got a LaMelo situation. What does his future look like? How excited is he about signing an extension in Charlotte? Maybe you give yourself some insurance by drafting Scoot Henderson and you're more willing to move on from LaMelo Ball in the future if you have another point guard of the future. So Charlotte, I think, is in a very tough position, because I do think it's really close between Brandon Miller and Scoot. Like I said, I probably lean Scoot, but there's a lot to consider for Charlotte. And I think they're less excited than most teams will be in their position, just because they got a lot of baggage to deal with right now. And I'm not sure how to handle it if I was in their position, because, of course, you want the talent of Miles Bridges on your team, but there's a lot going on there. And I think that factors in other decisions you make around him when you have a situation like that, that can be really nasty. And, you know, there are probably going to be more details coming about that in the future, and how you handle that is going to be very difficult for that franchise.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions for the Hornets. I think I'd go Scoot. I think that you can play those two together, he and LaMelo. I think that they've both – Scoot played off the ball some for the Ignite, and then I think LaMelo with his shooting can play off ball. But, again, you know, they missed out on Anthony Davis. I think that they were hopeful back then, and they got the number two pick. Let's just don't Michael Kidd Gilchrist this draft. Like, you just got to get somebody good. And I think Scoot.
Kidd Gilchrist was okay for a little while.
Was he?
Was he?
His shot was never beautiful. In NBA history. It was never beautiful. He really, it was so broke.
Yeah, there it is. It's just, I can't.
I literally can't even do
Kidd Gilchrist today. Yeah.
I've had this stance in the past. I miss the old days where guys had ugly jumpers in the NBA. It feels like everybody's got like their shooting coach on the side now, and they got the perfect elbow tuck. I miss the Sean Marion days.
Yeah.
The Chuck Hayes ugly free throw. I miss just having those unique looking jump shots in the league. Now everybody wants to shoot like Steph or Clay. Bring back ugly jump shots.
Who's got the ugliest jump shot now?
Oh, Mason Plumlee, hands down. It's not even close.
He goes lefty now too. That's despicable.
Yeah,
it's nasty looking.
But what about a guard? Like even some of the guys who used to be good shooters would have funky form. Like Kevin Martin.
Yeah, that's another
had funky form.
His shot looked like an elephant trunk.
Page's was beautiful, but it was like he shot it from like this. Reggie Miller, obviously, one of the finest examples of just weird shooting form. But yeah, you're right.
Just another way that Steph has ruined the game. Steph has ruined the game. Beautiful shooting.
I'm trying to think of a gross shooting form that works. Malcolm Brogdon is a little funky. Malcolm Brogdon like puts it way in front of him, kind of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tyreke Evans used to have a nasty one. He used to like bring the ball over his head.
Way too many Tyreke Evans mentions on this podcast.
Yeah, you can tell I'm a part-time Pelicans writer.
Yeah, that's right.
I fully take it over the Heat beat.
A scarred part-time Pelicans writer.
it's very strange to be around a franchise that like wins in April and May.
Wow.
I'm not used to seeing that covering the team I've been around for the past 7 years.
Unbelievable. Well, that's going to do it for this week's Point of Contention. Thanks so much for listening. Make sure you subscribe to all of our podcasts at the Athletic Podcast Network. Warriors Plus Minus, Anything Is Potable, Down to Dunk, No Dunks, Glue Guys, Sixers Beat, and the Bun and Cardigan Show. For Jay King, for Will Guillory, I'm Andrew Schlecht. We will see you guys next time.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.